This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Maurice Ravel was fascinated by intricate machines. His father was an engineer who helped refine the internal combustion engine, and Ravel himself collected wind-up toys and loved to invent things for the children of his close friends. His mother was Basque and had been raised in Madrid. Ravel's love for Spanish-flavored music was probably a result of the folk songs his mother would sing to him. The family moved to Paris when Ravel was 3 months old, and he started piano lessons at age 7. He began studying at the prestigious Paris Conservatoire, but by this time he had already decided that he would rather be a composer than a pianist. After being expelled for failing to win a medal in his first 3 years, he returned as a composition student of Gabriel Fauré. Again, he failed to win a medal and was dropped from the class, but he continued to audit Fauré's courses, and the two remained lifelong friends. Ravel's first compositions were panned. Critics called him a mediocrely gifted debutante who might amount to something in about 10 years if he works hard. Ravel tried several times to win the prestigious Prix de Rome and the stipend that went with it, but by this point his music was considered too conservative for the avant-garde and too avant-garde for the conservatives, who included the director of the Paris Conservatoire, who was on the prize committee. After Ravel lost the prize in 1905, a competition he was favored to win, the entire musical community of Paris was scandalized. It was called L'Affaire Ravel, and the conservatoire's director was forced to resign. Even though he was replaced by Ravel's friend Fauré, Ravel did not return to the conservatoire, and over the next 10 years, he did indeed amount to something. Ravel wrote his Concerto in G to play on an American tour in 1928. Some of the material was originally part of a Basque-flavored piece for piano and orchestra that he had started in 1914 but never finished. Ravel didn't finish this piece until 4 years after that tour of America, but there are echoes of Gershwin and American jazz all through it. That tour, by the way, was a huge success for Ravel. He received the kind of standing ovations he never got in Paris, became friends with Gershwin and Duke Ellington, and was paid a guaranteed sum of $10,000, which would be over $120,000 today. Ravel's Piano Concerto in G starts with the whack of a slapstick, which is a lot like the sound of a mechanical toy itself, and the rhythms of the piece often imitate mechanical sounds. The piano is there right from the beginning, contributing to the buzz, against which the piccolo whistles the first cheerful tune. After a while, the piano comes forward with the first jazzy theme, a reminder that the first intention behind this work had been to charm American audiences. Like many classical musicians at that time, Ravel had fallen in love with what he knew of jazz, which meant mostly the somewhat sweetened and watered-down translations of it that had made their way to Paris. But here and there, you can also hear echoes of that Basque piece from 1914. It's an old and not terribly accurate cliché that the best Spanish music was written by French composers. But in Ravel's case, we have the testimony of one of the greatest Spanish composers, Manuel de Falla, who wrote of the subtly genuine Spanishness of Ravel's first major orchestral work, the Rhapsodie Espagnole. Even though Ravel had never been to Spain, Falla said that Ravel's was a Spain he had felt in an idealized way through his mother. Toward the end of the opening movement, the harp quietly ushers in another solo passage, which spins out to a bright conclusion. The Adagio is one of the loveliest things Ravel ever wrote. The piano begins alone, spinning out a long, extended melody over a kind of slow waltz bass that manages to be incredibly gentle, even while it moves in constant cross-rhythm against the song in the right hand. When this melody finally rounds off, a flute enters softly with a new theme, followed by the other woodwinds. Eventually, the full orchestra swells to a climax, making way for the English horn to return with the opening melody while the piano decorates it. At some point in the early stages of composition, Ravel had told Marguerite Long, who would play the premiere of the concerto, that the piece as a whole would end softly, with trills. He changed his mind about that, but the idea of expressive trills clearly stayed in his mind. He used them in the first movement cadenza, and they lead the adagio to its quiet finish. Ravel had always been a methodical composer, but the Adagio caused him more difficulty than almost any other piece he wrote. He would manage to squeeze out just a couple of bars at a time, then break off in despair that he would ever finish. As the finale begins, we're back in the world of wind-up toys and machines. Non-stop piano figures, woodwind exclamations in foreign tongues, that is, different keys, and even the slapstick, all refer back to the first movement. but keep moving this one relentlessly forward in a kind of perpetual motion. The jazz elements are here too, including the occasional trombone smear. It ends the same way it began. Ravel once said, "The music of a concerto should, in my opinion, be lighthearted and brilliant and not aim at profundity or at dramatic effects." And the success of his concerto in G definitely supports his point of view. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.